This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Tudors Dynasty Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the Tudors Dynasty Podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Larson. Well, it's March. It's Women's History Month. And recently, I have been reminded that it was not only men who were artists at Tudor Court, that there were also some very talented women as well. So with that in mind, I invited back my dear friend, Melanie Taylor, to discuss two female artists at Tudor Court, Susanna Hornboot and Lavina Tierlink. Mel, welcome back.
It's a privilege to be with you again, Rebecca. This is great. Looking forward to this one.
I love talking art with you because if you're a first-time listener to the show, Melanie is an art historian, so she has extensive background in artists and pieces of art. And I thought, who better than Melanie to discuss these women? So, Mel, before we even get started today, let's talk a little bit about these two women and what is it about them that has fascinated you so much?
Basically, because they're very little known about, and I love puzzles. And, you know, up until fairly recently, and with women becoming more powerful and doing politics and heading up companies, suddenly women in history are beginning to be looked at and they're emerging from the shadows. So it's great.
I'm glad. We've talked about this on the show before about how much I'd like to bring these women out of the shadows of history to discuss them with everybody. Let's talk a little bit about where they came from. Can we do that? And I'll let you start with whichever one you'd prefer to start with. But where did these women come from? Were they English subjects or did they come from somewhere else?
Oh, no. I mean, Susanna, well, both of them come from the Low Countries. And Susanna Hornboot is older than Lavina Tierlink, so we'll start with her. And her family came over in the early 1520s. We're not quite sure who invited them. Recent research has showed it's probably Catherine of Aragon, who, because Susanna's father was valet de chambre and court painter to Margaret of Austria, who, of course, was regent of the Netherlands. And he was granted leave to come to England. And probably Catherine was the one who invited them because she, of course, was brought up as a princess and great patron of the arts. And her you know, she knew about all of those and she'd had a portrait painted herself. But Susanna is the shadowy figure behind Gerard and her brother Lucas. Lucas and Gerard both worked for Henry, officially. We know that from the accounts. But Susanna, of course, being a woman, would have been able to sit in Catherine's court and paint and draw the Queen and any other woman that was there. And Catherine's court was very, very much women only. Lucas, if he was going to be painting either of them, would have required a chaperone and there would have had to have been other people there to make sure he didn't do anything naughty. Mm. So now it's beginning to be debated that Susanna is the one who's responsible for the portraits of Catherine as queen in the 1520s and Princess Mary. So, you know, it's logical.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so can we do a reference back right now to the episode with you and Emma, where we discussed a female artist teaching Catherine of Aragon and Mary how to paint? Was that Susanna?
I think it was. So does Emma. We're both convinced that it was. It's a bit like other things that get described in inventories and diaries and documents. A woman artist taught them how to paint, but because women's positions were not really thought of, that's all you get.
Yeah.
So you just have to guess.
Of
But
course.
yeah, Susanna married two men who were part of Henry's household. That she married John Parker and then John Gwillem. And in the mid 1520s, she was married, and therefore her status changes. She's a wife, she's a mother, but she's still an artist, and she's probably helping out her brother and her father, but she won't get A, paid, or B, given any credit. Yes.
So, what else did she do within Catherine's household? We talk about her being a painter, but what other purpose did she have there?
As far as I know, she's not, and as far as other people have dug down, it's not really known. She might have been a gentlewoman, like Lavina was much later. And so she would have had access to anybody, and she would have been around the court, but it was her husband who had the status as a gentleman pensioner. So he would have had his duties. And of course, if she's married to him, she's a wife. So she's got to run the household. They didn't have any kids at that point.
Okay.
Yeah, no kids. But there are various theories, but none of them have actually been proved yet as to what she might
Okay.
have done. It's Lucas who is the central character.
Yeah, I found that interesting when you mentioned her two brothers. Did you say it was brothers?
No, she's got one brother, Lucas,
And the
and
other
her
one.
father is Gerard is her father.
I've never heard his name before.
Oh, he's in the art history world of people who study illuminated manuscripts. He's well known because at this point, it's if you like, it's the dying days of the illuminator because technology is moving on. You've got printing, you've got books are much cheaper. Woodcuts are much cheaper to produce. Anybody can hand color those, and the manuscript or the charter or the treaties are all very select, expensive, and a status symbol, or in the case of a treaty, very necessary to that exchange. And Henry and Francis have a series of treaties, which. Their competition continues, but they're quite those images are quite well known. But I found one which is a lot in the V&A, and it's the letters patent of Thomas Forster, who is Henry's embroiderer. So if you think of Henry's amazing costumes. And all of that embroidery, that's who it was who did all of that amazing work, or the people he employed, which of course could be women, but they wouldn't ever be named. And he would have employed the Horrenboot family, not Henry. Forster would have employed the Horrenboot family to illuminate this charter, which was great because he was given properties in the City of London by the king as a recognition of his. Talents, and he would have got the rents from them. So instead of just being paid money, he was given if you like, a stipend from properties owned by the crown. But I'll send you some images so you can slot them in, and you can see that it's the start of the portrait miniature of the king. And you have to remember these are only about an inch across portraits. So they are tiny. But it's the edge of the pattern, which is lovely. But when it comes to Susanna's work, it's far, far more difficult to pin down. But she is important.
It most definitely. And of course, my mind goes in weird places when I'm thinking about them doing these miniatures. And I know I'm probably veering off topic just a little bit here, but when they're doing these miniatures, how on earth are they? Do they have a magnifying glass? You know, like how good are their eyes in order to make these tiny images?
Well, we know from a portrait of Lavina's father that he wore specs.
Okay. See, that's probably because he was straining his eyes all
He was straining his
the
eyes. He had eye strain, and there's two versions of that. And one's in the Met in New York, and one eye is looking a bit weird. And I do wonder whether he had a monocle, so because it looks as though it's been
Oh,
pushed open. So it's why
interesting.
were there two versions of that particular image? Well, probably because he had two daughters. Victoria was one and Lavina was the other. But the miniatures also carried messages. I mean, they could be love tokens. And what's more, they're a lot cheaper than the big portraits. It's about 2 or 3 pounds, about 2 or 3,000 pounds in today's money. But,
Wow.
and they were held in the hand. So you could have a private conversation with someone and sort of say, you know, this is my secret lover. Or in the case of Catherine, there's a lovely one in the Buccleuch collection where she's got this monkey. We're back to pets, Rebecca.
Yes, yeah, and this monkey again.
It's the monkey. And, you know, this is the monkey with the chain round his waist. And is that Henry? Is she going to show it to any particular woman who thinks, right, Queen's getting a bit old now, so I'm gonna have a chance at the main man,
Yeah.
possibly. But just to be shown that, they'd get the message. My husband is a lusty fellow because monkeys are signifiers of lust in the medieval bestiaries. But he's
Yeah.
chained to me by marriage. So go on, get hop into bed with him, but I'm going to be queen. It's just a quiet way of saying, lady, get lost.
Right, because we're
Move
saying
on.
this was the 1520s, so anybody who
Yeah.
studied the Tudors for any amount of time knows that was the Anne Boleyn time.
Oh yeah. Now there her court was very, very different. And by the way, she hated monkeys. She had a real thing against monkeys, but you can imagine why.
Was just going to say, was that because they were used as a message against her?
Well, there is the obvious thing that this is Queen Catherine with her pet, and it's on a chain because it was scampering all over the place and whipping off those gable hoods and pulling people's caps off and then jumping up into the rafters and sort of sitting there chattering and then pulling the feathers apart or ripping off the jewels. I mean, they must have been a nightmare.
Yeah, it was like having a toddler in the room who had no parent watching them.
And that could climb.
Yes. Very important part right there. They could climb. Okay, so we have discovered that Susanna came in the 1520s. When did Lavina come to Tudor Court?
Ah, well, can we just roll back a bit about
Sure.
Susanna? She plays quite an important part in the entourage sent to pick up Anna of Cleves.
Lavina,
No,
we're still on
Susanna.
Susanna. Sorry, I took
Thomas,
us.
yes, it's all right. John Parker dies, and she marries John Gwillem in 1539. And 3 weeks after her marriage, Thomas Cromwell says to her, I want you to go with everybody to pick up Anna and bring her back to England. And I'm going to give you £40 to go out and get a new wardrobe. That's the straight inflation rate. That's 16,000 quid to go and spend on clothes.
Oh, let's pick out an
Please,
outfit.
somebody, I'd love that.
Yes.
She was English was not her first language, and she would be able to sit there and listen to the German and the dialects and be able to report back what was being said in the very enclosed court that Anna was part of, which of course other people couldn't do. So this leads on to how much of it was a painter, either a man or a woman, able to spy?
Right.
Because if you're going to have your portrait painted, it's not a public event. And you get a very close rapport with the person who is painting your portrait, and you build a relationship, and you might let something slip. And in that particular instance, Susanna would be able to tell Thomas and the rest of the court what was going on in the Cleves court and what they thought about the marriage, because it's, Latin was the language of court talk, and not everybody spoke German
Right,
as
right.
she did.
Do we know if they knew that she spoke German?
Well, certainly Thomas did.
Yeah. But did the Cleves
Sure,
crew?
she was. We know that Anna didn't speak English, so that the cover story would have been Susanna was there to teach her English because she spoke German.
Smart.
Yeah. It's
Very smart.
it's interesting.
Do we have an image that she painted of Anne of Cleves?
No.
That's too bad.
That's too bad. We don't, but we do. There's a Holbein oil on panel, which is about 4 inches across in Vienna, which might be of Susanna. So that makes
Oh.
the link. The only thing is, it says that she was 28 in 1534. Well, there's a debate about this now, so it's quite possibly just another woman who's married to a gentleman pensioner who just happens to be wearing the same clothes that Susanna would have worn. So who knows? But she comes back to England and she has children and she's a happy wife and mum. And she may have painted the Yale miniature, which is much debated. Is it Lady Jane Grey? Is it Princess Elizabeth? Is it Princess Mary? I believe it's Amy Robsart. But you can find that one on my website. I'm not sending you that one.
I'll share a link for everybody.
And there is this is the time, of course, where you've got the sweating sickness that comes through. And she survives, but in 1544, her brother Lucas contracts the sweating sickness and he dies 6 months after Hans Holbein. So suddenly, Henry's court does not have either a professional illuminator or a professional painter of big portraits.
Interesting. I don't think we ever hear about that.
No, because, well, art historians know about it.
Right. The rest of us haven't heard about
Yeah,
it.
no.
Or
So,
maybe.
the word goes out, I need an illuminator. I need a new official court artist. And again, Margaret of Austria's court is raided. And William Scrots comes across, and he's the guy who paints the big portraits. And we know from the accounts that Lavina Teerling, whose surname is Benning, her maiden name is Benning, appears in the accounts of 1546. Now, I've got new research coming out soon that shows that her work was known about, so it might have been a direct recruitment. In which
Interesting.
case, Lavina was appointed as the first woman official artist in the whole of Europe.
That's amazing.
That's pretty radical in any court. So, all the theories about was it Catherine Parr or invited her, and hopefully we'll be set to all that speculation will be set, if you like, calmed down, and it'll be interesting.
Yeah, most definitely.
But she was, I mean, one of the first things she had to do was to produce a treaty for Henry, the Peace of Ardres of 1546. And that is in the French archives, because of course they were exchanged. And she's introduced a completely new idea for treaties. And this one, Henry wins the Battle of the Treaties. Who produces the best one? Is it Francis? He won the ba that battle in 1527. Or in this case, it's Henry. Because he's got Lovina, and she's recognized as coming from the third generation, going back to Hugo van der Goes and Roger van der Weyden and Van Eyck, who were the big names in the 15th century. They were direct links, and she's the third generation of the Bennings. She's the last as well, because, printing's taken over.
This is okay. So you make it sound like it was a competition on who could produce the best looking one. Was it really like that?
It was. I mean,
Wow.
the 1527 English treaty that's in Paris, which was produced by the Horemboot, whether it was Lucas, Susanna, or their father Gerard, is in pretty poor state. It's almost as if the French took one look at it and went, "Oh God, that's dreadful." Oh, and threw it in the corner, where it got trampled on, probably trodden on, whereas we looked at the one which the French sent across, which has got a portrait of Francis with his huge great nose and looking very regal, and this beautiful surrounding gold, and it's printed on very high class vellum, and so Francis won that. Oh, and the seal, which is solid gold, is bigger than the solid gold seal that was on the French, the one we sent to France. So we did come out of that one looking a bit mean on gold, and the French didn't like our paintings. It was as simple as that.
I think it's so easy for us to forget as we study Tudor history that there was so much more than just these relationships between people, that there were these maybe what we would perceive as hidden things that show power one way or another. And this is blowing my mind today.
Oh, the treaties were one way of doing it, definitely.
Yeah.
And, Lovina's there in 1546. And then, of course, Henry dies at the beginning of 1547. She's being paid £40 a year, which is £7 more than either Holbein or Lucas was paid. But it's at the king's pleasure. So when Henry dies, what's going to happen? Is that going to continue? It does. And we know that Princess Elizabeth, went, during Edward's reign, sends a portrait in little of herself to Edward. Princess Mary, as we know, is a grown woman and has her own court and is, sitting there quietly being Mary. Now, that portrait of Elizabeth could be in the Royal Collections Trust. And they think it's fairly certain that it is of Elizabeth and it is by Teerlinck. But again, it's an attributed to, which is code for we're not quite sure. So that's a modern day coding.
Interesting. I think I always assumed when there was the discussion of Elizabeth sending a portrait to her brother that it was the one where she's wearing that reddish pink dress.
No.
It's not that
That's
one.
big, but no, that reddish pink dress is a big, big portrait by William Scrotts.
Okay.
And that is hanging in Windsor Castle in the Queen's sitting room. So when you come over in June, we're going to have to go around Windsor Castle so that you can see all of these paintings.
No, I don't think I want to go to Windsor.
You don't? Okay, right, fine.
Just
Suit
kidding.
yourself.
Well, that's really interesting. I feel like when I have you on the show, I always learn more about art history than what we get at the surface level on the internet or in sometimes in books even.
Well, this is a time, particularly when it comes to women artists, that they're shadowy figures, and that goes right the way up to now. I mean, you ask anybody, name five women artists, and they'll be pushed. They'll be able to do the Rachel White Reads, and various. That's modern. She's modern. She's still alive, Rachel White Read.
Okay.
Sarah Lucas, she's still alive. They'll be able to do Artemisia Gentileschi because she's been all over the news. But anybody else, they'll have difficulty with. They'll know the big names like Holbein
Yeah.
and Turner, but it's difficult. It's only nerds like me that really get geeky about the whole thing. So with Edward's reign, I'm still digging in there. So I think she did the Treaty of Boulogne. But I'm still looking at that. And that has a portrait of a very young Edward. And it's literally half an inch tall within the letter. I mean, it's tiny, as you say, glasses, magnifying glass.
Yes.
And think of the weather. Think how dark it is in winter, especially in England, because we're so much further north than you are. You've got candlelight. The best time to paint is in the summer because the weather's better. It's not going to snow. It's not going to rain. Well, you hope it's not going to snow. So you've got a limited period of the year when you can actually paint. So it's all of these outside factors. And when Edward dies and you have all of that problem of Mary coming to the throne and Jane Grey and Northumberland, Lavina's the one who has to portray Mary on the Queen's Bench front sheet. And she does that, but it's unfinished, which is a shame because it's a lovely little painting. But again, that is probably 2 inches high. And it shows angels bringing her to the throne. You see her seated on the throne in the middle with the holy dove above her under a cloth of estate and angels either side of her with these banners, which would have had words in, except that's the missing bit. And on the other side, you've got Northumberland and this army in the background, and they're throwing down their weapons and sort of saying, "Okay, I surrender." So it tells the story of Northumberland's attempt to put, to oust Mary, but how by divine right she took the throne and angels helped her.
Oh, and this is all within a 2-inch portrait.
2 inch, maybe 2.5
Yeah.
inch height. It's a long
What?
time since I actually looked at that at Kew because it's a lovely piece.
How
But
does I
yeah.
just how does somebody learn to paint like that?
Practice.
You have to have special tools, I would assume. You can't just use a standard brush. You'd have to use
Nope.
something.
No, I mean, a big brush would be two or three hairs wide,
Okay.
and it would be squirrel.
Oh.
And they're bound onto a piece of wood with wax and thread. So you might have one which has maybe got five hairs on it, and that's a really big brush. But for the very, very detailed work, you're talking two, one or two. So it's doing it and painting it, let alone conceiving of that whole narrative,
Yeah.
is it's I well, you know, I certainly I've had a go, and no, it's difficult.
Well, you would definitely need to have a steady hand in order to do this.
Oh, definitely. That would, you know, you can rest your arm on something to stop it jiggling about, but you certainly couldn't do it sort of if you're tired or if you've been partying too much the night before.
They didn't do that at Tudor Court.
Oh, don't forget they drank small beer, so 1% kill off all the bugs,
Yeah, there you go.
which. But when Mary comes to the throne, there's a problem. There's a big problem. How do you portray a queen? We've never had a queen.
True.
Yeah. And on the seals and, you know, on charters, it's always been a king, either as a warrior. It's difficult for a woman. One side, it's great. You can put her on the throne and you can show her like that. But as a warrior, that's impossible. So, Lavina, it takes a woman to solve it, doesn't it?
Of course it does.
Course it does. And Lavina is credited with creating the first great seal for Mary. And when she marries Philip, that one as well.
So, okay. I'm trying to get some time frames here.
That's
Suzanne.
1550, 1554.
So
Harry's
Susanna
birth.
was at the beginning part of the Tudor dynasty, and Lavina would have been more toward the middle and the end.
And the middle and the end, and they overlap because Susanna dies, we think, in 1554. It's where she disappears from any records. And
Oh.
by then she had three kids, and you know, she'd been John Gwilym's second wife. So he had lots of children, but she just disappears. And then Lavina continues. And one of the first things she has to do for Mary is to produce a new order of service for the Good Friday blessing of the cramp rings. And she illuminates this, and she has two full pages showing Mary as queen blessing the cramp rings and then curing the king's evil. Because only the English monarchs, oh, and the French, could cure the king's evil by
Can
laying on
you?
the hands.
I think I need you to clarify a little bit for the listeners what a cramp ring is. It's not for cramps.
Well, it is and it isn't. The cramp ring was given to help cure various ill ailments. And if you were suffering from the king's evil, which was in fact a form of tuberculosis of the lymph nodes, you were given, after you'd had the queen's hands laid on you, which of course would cure you, not, you'd be given a cramp ring. I'm still trying to get my head around these cramp rings because it's not just the queen who does these. You find them in Roman history as well, though, cramp rings, right the way through. And it's a way of, if you like, taking a spiritual essence, putting it into a ring, and that will help cure whatever it is that you're suffering from.
Oh, it's like the magnetic bracelets that you see sold these days.
That's it. Yep.
It's a magic ring.
It's a magic ring. It's a magic ring. But the cramp ring prayer book has survived. It survived civil wars. It survived iconoclasm. It's World War II. It's still there. And it's a treasure of Westminster Cathedral, which is the Roman Catholic thing. It's wonderful. And I've had the pleasure of actually looking at it and photographing it.
How large is that one?
That's the illuminations are about 6 by 4.5 inches. Then they've got lovely decorations all the way around, and you've got where she's kneeling and putting her hands, and of course the hands are emphasized, so it looks as though she's got hands which are about this big. And they're emphasized to show that it's her touch that's doing this. But above that, there is an hourglass which is lying on its side. And at the bottom, there's a skull. So time has been suspended. And that is showing you that it doesn't matter who, whether it's Mary or whoever's on the throne, this is the monarch who will cure you and make you better from this awful disease, which was very disfiguring, very disfiguring, but also very prevalent.
I love all the hidden messages.
Oh, there's lots of those. There's
So
lots of
it's
those.
easy for me to look at a painting, any painting, a portrait or a scene or whatever it is, and just look at it from 100 yards away. I don't know how else to describe it. I
Yeah.
look at it in a much more superficial way than, say, you would, you know?
Yeah, 18 years of digging around in medieval bestiaries and everything. Well, we're actually the generation where we're most image conscious. I mean, you've got Henry, whose mouth is crossed over in the background of your bear, behind you. And yes, he looks regal and quite amazing. I think that's a wonderful portrait of him. Is that AI?
I think it is, yes.
Yeah, right. And there you go. There he is. But that's taken, you can see from his jewels, his wealth and status, and the rubies are for sacrifice because they're blood red, and the sapphire represents heaven, and diamonds are for constancy. All of this is in the bestiaries, by the way. And then you have the flowers in the margins, and if they've got five petals, that's the five wounds of Christ. And if there are three of them, that could represent the Trinity. So you've got the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. So it's like peeling back an onion.
It really is.
Yeah. And when you get in after, if you like, the Civil War and Charles II's back on the throne, the miniature art goes on through to the 1800s, because people still want to have portraits of their loved ones. And then along comes photography in 1839, and that's it. Kills it stone dead. On your phone, do you have photographs of your family and loved ones?
Yes, of course.
That's like having a portrait miniature. You select who you show it to.
Exact,
Except
yeah.
that, yeah, except for nowadays we've got social media. So everybody puts up photographs of their loved ones on TikTok and Facebook, and I don't because I don't know how to work it.
I always think when I think of the miniatures, I go back to my Thomas Seymour research and how he thanks Catherine Parr for the miniature that she sent or she was going to send. I might have it incorrect there. And I'd like to imagine him having this miniature of her, pulling it out occasionally, taking a peek at her.
And where is it now? That's the big question.
Yeah, or exactly which one was it? Because there was no specification as to who painted it or anything. It could have been. I mean, there
It
is
could have
that
been
one.
Susanna. It could have been Susanna. It could have been Lucas's wife, Margaret Haselweather, who there's a new name for you.
Yes.
And they had a daughter called Jacintha. And she too was a painter.
Would that have fit with the 1540s timeline, though?
Yeah.
Hmm.
But the problem with that is that they didn't do any court work. So we don't know whether or not, if there is, or so far, nothing has appeared in any accounts or inventories And it's again, it's the documents which will prove or disprove any of these theories. Now, there is a possibility of, I know that Emma's found a name in the 1510s, which she's busy trying to track down, which would be interesting because that's possibly another woman. But again, there's only one mention and we don't know any work. But that was at the point where there was no illuminator, because the scribe and illuminator, Quentin Powlett, I think his name was Quentin Powlett, or Poulet, but the English, not being able to speak French, call him Powlett. He is Poulet. He died in 1506. So who was doing the illuminating of the documents and the treaties and everything else that was needed? We just don't know. But when it's Lavina, she's so far, she where we've got up to, she's now doing Mary. Mary dies in 1558, and she goes on to serve Elizabeth. And she's still being paid £40 a year at the monarch's pleasure, should we call it?
Sure.
And at the beginning of Elizabeth's reign, under Mary's will, it says, please pay all my debts. And in the accounts, there is a payment to Lavina Teerlinck's husband on behalf of Teerlinck, which shows that right the way through Mary's reign, she didn't get paid.
What?
Paid a lump sum of £150, which is for the time that she didn't get paid.
So is
And
she, was
she
she
was
just
at court.
working on credit?
Yep. She was
Okay.
doing it pro bono. And right underneath that is Robert Brandon, who was the Queen's goldsmith. And he is paid £1,500, which is the equivalent of several million nowadays.
Wow.
And you're thinking, so he was obviously lending money or doing work and not being paid for it. So Mary, was Mary a bit flaky on paying her bills?
She wasn't like her grandfather, huh?
No. Or as parsimonious as her half sister Elizabeth. So Elizabeth is her different. She's different. She uses Teerlinck to illuminate the indenture for the Poor Knights of Windsor, which was something that Henry wanted done. So Elizabeth fulfills something under Henry's will, but it's a slightly different style. It's not as flowery as the Cramp Ring manuscript. And there are various other things which she may or may not have done. Again, it's question mark. And she's getting older. Do we know what she looks like? Yes, we do. That was my coup back in 2006 when I did my master's. There is an unknown lady dated 1572 by Nicholas Hilliard up in the Buccleuch collection. And my examiners ex accepted that, yes, I'd proved the point. This was Lavina Teerlinck. Well, that gave us a date of birth. 1520, same year as William Cecil.
Wow.
So they were contemporaries. And you think, okay, why would she get Hilliard to paint her portrait? Well, the Queen was notoriously vain, and she did not like to be reminded that she was aging. So in 1572, she was just 39, wasn't she? So nobody likes to be told that actually you're getting to the point where you're a bit over the hill, Queenie.
Oh, I'd say bite me.
And Lavina was probably another one who could sit there and just quietly absorb everything that was going around, going on around her. And did she pass on snippets of conversation to the Queen herself? Did she pass them on to William Cecil? Did she pass them on to Frances Walsingham? It's possible. We know that she did several of the, in fact, quite a few of the peas on the front of the Queen's Bench proceedings. But 1576 in the June, she dies.
1576. Okay.
So she was only 56, but that was old age,
Right.
according to thing. So was this portrait that she did of, that Hillian did of her in 1572, was that her quiet way of saying, I found you a successor to replace me. I'm getting on a bit. My eyes hurt, and you'll like him because he's pretty cute.
Where is the cute message in this?
Ah, I'll send you a photograph of the miniature, which is in the V&A. Oh yeah, he's cute. If you, Aidan Turner, did you, have you seen the Poldark series?
I have not. I'm familiar with it. I think I've seen
All
the
right.
sneak peeks, but I've never watched it.
Oh well. If ever a film was ever to be made of my novel Truth of the Line, which is all about Hilliard's relationship with Elizabeth and weaves in Lavina's story, as I see it, when you see this miniature, you'll understand what I mean about he's cute. And I'd like Aidan Turner to play him because, yeah, they're like two peas in a pod.
Oh, I love it. I love that so much.
But Teerlink was given a lifetime annuity in 1559 by Elizabeth for her loyalty to the Tudor family.
Rightfully so.
And it's was it, she'd been there since 1546, 1559, she's been there 13 years. Had she been quietly passing messages up to between Elizabeth and other members of the court? Don't know.
I think this is so fascinating how these women, I'd never looked at them this way before. They were so much more than artists.
Oh,
They
they were
were,
strong women.
yeah, they were in a very important part of court.
And everybody, but that's not just the artists, that's every woman. And the film, Charles Laughton film, The Six Wives of Henry VIII, which was, I think, 1933, it's black and white.
Yeah.
You look at the way that the various six wives, if you like, manipulate him. And in England, women in 1933 were still regarded as chattels. It wasn't until 1974, Matrimonial Causes Act, section, I think it was 19, blah, 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 that suddenly women were independent and recognized as people as their own right. It's a 20, well, it's less than 100 years since that film. And 1974, it's 50 years that women have actually had the right. We had the vote, but when it came to other things, when it came to marriage, we were still regarded as a chattel.
I think it's hard for us who didn't grow up with that to understand not only what it was like 50 plus years ago, but centuries ago to be a woman. Because we do have more freedoms now. Our voices are heard more than they were now. It's still not perfect.
Well, it's still not perfect by any
But
measure of means.
it was a different game. Women were just as smart back then. They were just as cunning, I think.
But they went about it in a different way. Now we
Yes.
just say, right, I'm not doing that. The law says I don't have to do it. Go away.
Right.
Shove off.
Be
I'm going
gone
to
with
divorce you.
you.
No. But back in 1933, no. I mean, it and that film is a great way of showing young girls nowadays as to what women in England went through. But then you have people, women who actually were in Parliament like Lady Astor, who used to spar quite well with Winston Churchill. She was quite a character. But again, these people had their portraits painted. You know, they want to be immortalized in paint, not just cameras. So, you know, what is the art form? Is it the paint? Is it the photograph? Is it the document or the legacy that you leave behind?
Speaking of legacies, I think this is the perfect opportunity. I know you could talk about these two women all day with me,
Yeah,
but I think this is the perfect opportunity to wrap it up a little bit. And I would love to hear what you think the legacy of these two amazing women should be.
I think that's just emerging. The more we do research, the more documents that we find, the more that attributions can be given to the work that they did. The big one is going to be Susanna because of the fact that she's so overshadowed by her brother, Lucas. When it comes to Tierlink, watch this space.
Something's coming.
Something's coming.
Dun, dun, dun. Well, Melanie, thank you so much for joining me again today to discuss Susanna Hornboot and Lavina Tierlink. This was
Nay
such a
Benning.
nay Benning. This was such a fun discussion, and I really hope this gets the listeners to do their own digging to learn more about these women and other female artists in history.
I hope so too. Women artists is one of my pet subjects. I lecture on it and do all sorts of stuff. But yeah, they deserve a voice. They deserve a voice.
Thank you, Melanie.
And thank you for having me.
The Tudors Dynasty Podcast.